From the halls of every school in Michigan, this is School Talks on 760 WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy. Sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now, take your seats. Class is in session. Here's Robert.
Welcome to School Talks. We have an exciting lineup for you today featuring Dr. Jim Sawyer, president of Macomb Community College. We'll be joined by the Reverend Dr. Charles Beaulieu, senior pastor from Birmingham First United Methodist Church, and retired educator and career and technical education author Frank Antonucci. And I'll close out today's program with the first of a multi-part series on understanding the kinds of schools in Michigan, whether public, private, or charter. All this and more coming up. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Jim Sawyer, the president of Macomb Community College. Welcome to the program, Jim.
Thank you, Bob. Nice, great to see you.
Yeah, I appreciate you stopping by. In doing some reading about things happening in the county, I came across the Michigan Maritime Manufacturing Initiative that is in operation or underway at Macomb, and I was intrigued by this, just given the number of players involved in what you're providing students. And could you share with us what inspired this program and tell us a little bit about what it is?
Sure. It's a great program, Bob. It's really designed to train folks in both welding and CNC machining in a 17-week period of time. And this really came together as a collaboration with the U.S. Navy and the state of Michigan and the county, Macomb County. Macomb Community College is well known nationally for our workforce development program, so we were kind of on their radar screen. The Navy had decided to bring a program to Michigan. They weren't really sure where they were going to do it. They have one that they stood up in Danville, Virginia, the first one. Mm-hmm. So going through the process, they decided to go with us. This is the workforce programs are really in our college's DNA. We've done them for a long time. We do them very well. And these are just great opportunities for students because, some people just can't see themselves going through a degree-type program. And these types of programs, as I said, in a 17-week period of time, they develop the skills. It really helps them get very good family, sustainable wage jobs.
And, one of our core sponsors of School Talks is Must Construction Careers. And over the past, 6-8 months, I've had the opportunity to interview just about every trade apprenticeship opportunity in this area, from elevator constructors to electricians to plumbers. And it's amazing the opportunity it provides, given how important the economy needs hands-on type work. And with all the attention around Selfridge right now and sort of the consistent attention that runs up and down the Van Dyke corridor with the tank plant and that, this is a pretty neat sort of divergence from that type of stuff, given the Navy's involvement. Does this program provide residents? Is the training free?
Yeah, the training is free for the first 370 students. That goes through 2027. As you point out, Bob, really Macomb County is well known as a defense corridor, a tremendous amount of defense type of work that's done, supporting both the grant land systems, General Dynamics Land Systems, BAE, some large OEMs, as well as the tier suppliers that are there. Mm-hmm. So it really does fit well within the county. Macomb County, we engineer, design, and make things. That's what mm-hmm. we do. So the defense sector has really become more and more predominant in comparison to the automotive sector.
Sure.
So what's nice about these particular programs, these are transferable skills. While they're really being put forth as to help develop the workforce to support the maritime system in the country, the welding and machining skills transcend all industries. Mm-hmm. So it's great for the individuals going through the program.
You know, that's exactly what I learned talking to all of these different apprenticeship programs, is just how transferable the skill set is to any number of jobs and employment. I understand the first class graduated in March of 25. Tell us a bit about what that means to you and sort of the journey that got you there.
Well, it was very exciting. I mean, the program came together fairly quickly when they made the decision to come to Macomb. You know, we had to purchase equipment, renovate the facility, and so it was a very, we did that in a very short period of time. So it was very exciting to see that first class complete. And really what was so amazing, Bob, was the different stories of the students that were in there. You know, we had folks who were unemployed. We had one gentleman who became homeless partway through the program. And really just testaments to perseverance and resilience. And, you know, it makes us proud to just play a small part in helping those folks transform their lives and really get them on a path to sustainable jobs, again, to support themselves and their families. For us, it was a special day, something we hadn't done before, but was really neat, is we actually had the graduates sign with their employers, too, because several of them, the majority already had jobs. Mm-hmm. So the employers came in and they actually signed agreements with the employer, so that was kind of special. We were so pleased to have Governor Whitmer join us as well to celebrate that as that great event. So just a really a feel-good event and a great way to launch that program.
Sure. We're currently chatting with Jim Sawyer, the president of Macomb Community College, about this wonderful opportunity for students. Jim, let me follow up. You mentioned welding and CNC. Are there any particular certifications or skills that come with this course?
Yeah, there's four different certifications for the welding through the American Welding Society, or AWS. So again, those are credentials then that those students take with them forever. And then we did use the NIMS, the National Institute for Metalworking Standards, to set up some certificates in the CNC machining side as well.
Mm-hmm. So, and a student in the program, what kind of support can they expect as they finish this course and actually enter that particular skilled trade?
Well, it's a 17-week accelerated program, Bob, so it's pretty intense. It's really like having a full-time job. But the college is all in providing support. They mm-hmm. have access to all the different support systems we have at the college. For the program in particular, we have not only a full-time instructor, but we have a full-time teaching assistant as well that works very closely with the students. The cohorts are only 12 students, so there's a lot of opportunity for one-on-one interaction. And, you know, in programs like this, the students come in with a wide variety of skills. So it's really, I commend our faculty and the teaching staff to be able to take that wide variety and give them the customized and focused training they need to be successful.
Mm-hmm. So with one graduating class under your belt, so to speak, can you share a particular success story from a recent graduate? Anyone in particular?
A couple that come to mind. Certainly, the homeless gentleman I mentioned he was just so moved to be able to be in a position to do this, and how the satisfaction he had for himself, I think, is what was most special about that. We've had two veterans go through. We had a Coast Guard retiree who went through the program who hadn't been in manufacturing before. And then we had a Navy veteran who had just been discharged and really jumped right into this program. So it was so nice to see a seamless opportunity for him to transfer into the next chapter of his life.
Mm-hmm. What advice would you give a future student who's considering this program?
Well, I think it's about hard work and really the desire to find something you truly love to do. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the way we're offering this with all the experiential learning, people get a really good sense of what this will be like, a real job. Mm-hmm. And we try to help explain that to people and prepare them, because we don't want people getting halfway through the program and dropping out. And we've done really good with retention. We've lost a couple students, but the vast majority have continued and completed. And I think it's just, you mentioned earlier about the trades and the needs there are. And I don't, as much as we try to highlight that, I don't know that word gets out enough. Mm-hmm. And particularly for folks who aren't familiar with the trades. So we play a role in trying to do that. And at the college, while we have a number of trades and certificate programs, we really support all apprenticeships, because we do see them as great opportunities for our residents to get good jobs.
You know, I tell this to every young kid or young adult who will listen. When you come downtown and take part in Detroit's resurgence, whether it's a Tiger game or a Lions game, and you start to see cranes in the air, it's a good sign. And, you know, some of our core sponsors on School Talks, Plant Moran Real Point is building Henry Ford Hospital. They're finishing the Motown Museum, and all the different plumbers and electricians and operating engineers who worked on the Gordie Howe Bridge. It is right in front of you down here. And your point at the start of this about transferable skills makes a ton of sense to me. So, Jim Sawyer, the president of Macomb Community College, thanks for stopping by, sharing this great program for kids, and I look forward to the continued success of the program.
Thank you, Bob. Great to see you.
Coming up after the break, we'll chat with Reverend Dr. Charles Boyeux from Birmingham First United Methodist Church. This is 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy, sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran Real Point, Collins & Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Once again at the head of the class, Dr. Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is the Reverend Dr. Charles Boyeux, who is the senior pastor at Birmingham Berkeley First United Methodist Church. Welcome to the program, Reverend.
Thank you, Dr. Livernoy. It's good to be here.
So I must say, your story and your goals for the future really intrigued me when I learned about it. And just want to share with our listeners, Reverend Boyeux has an incredible history with the Methodist Church in and around the greater Detroit area, served in numerous roles, helped revitalize the Southfield community at Hope Methodist Church, and a number of other prominent roles at what the church calls the conference level, and at one point was actually the superintendent of this area for a time. And I think it speaks volumes to your passion for faith and doing the right thing. And I'm really excited to share with our listeners what your plans are from where you came. And I think a good place to start would be to tell us a bit about the academy that you hope to or are currently building back from where you came in Liberia.
Thank you. Back in Liberia, we are building the Charles Boyeux Academy to provide excellence in education and vocational training for Liberia's children.
And your journey from Liberia to the United States, how do you think that has helped shape your vision for the school back home?
You know, most education seems to be around imagination, concept. And my time in America, which now has stretched to 42 years, has taught me that concept is not enough until it is practiced. And so taking education to transform society has been a kind of an inspiration for me when I look at my country and the state it is in.
Mm-hmm. You know, in my experience as a superintendent, I'm very familiar with the size of land and property where schools are occupied. And I understand that the school in Liberia is going to take up almost 33 acres of land. And could you share with our listeners what the sort of the layout or the vision is for that property?
Yes, we have about 32.9 acres of land in two spots, 31.6 in one spot and about 3.5 in the other. The smaller piece of land will house the elementary school because it is right now in the middle of a community highly populated with families and their children, and we want to place the school in proximity of their homes so that they are safe, confident in taking their children to school without the high cost of transportation. The remaining land, which is a little over 31 acres, will house the junior and senior high and a lot of facilities to undergird their education.
You know, your point about moving it near where the people live is very similar to how schools developed in our area, where at one time when the population was literally booming, it was a priority to have an elementary school within walking distance of just about every neighborhood here in Southeast Michigan. And I can tell you that when they built them, they didn't expect people to drive their children to school, which they do now. Mm-hmm. So we always had to expand our parking lot. So I think it's a wise decision to anticipate having it close to where people live. From other schools in Liberia, how do you see this new academy being different or unique compared to them in Liberia?
Well, Liberia went through a 14-year civil war that started on Christmas Eve, 1989. The country is about the size of the state of Ohio in terms of land area, and the population today is 5.4 million. So it's a small country. And yet for 14 years, the country ravaged itself apart in a war that I still don't understand what benefited the country from. So we are left with a fragile economy, destroyed infrastructure, a kind of a restart of the educational system that was so much better than it is today. We have a plethora of public schools with poor quality because of poor funding and the inavailability of well-trained teachers who get good pay for work. So the rebuilding of that society is at issue. This school will be one of the few excellent schools in academia and vocational training. In that regard, it's unique. It is not the only unique one. It will be one of the few unique schools that resemble the kind of schools that I went to in Liberia before the war.
I see. And that was a military coup d'etat, is that right?
Yes, in 1980 it was a military coup d'etat. Yeah. And 9 years later, the country had been torn apart by a dictatorship, military style governance, which was new to this very old in Africa's first republic.
Mm-hmm. So we're currently chatting with the Reverend Dr. Charles Boyu from Birmingham Berkeley First United Methodist Church about his plans to open a new school back home in Liberia. And, you know, the way you describe the need to rebuild the country makes me sort of appreciate why you find vocational programs so important. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yes. We have schools in Liberia. The quality ones are few. But as I have found in my life, not everyone is wired the same way. God has made each individual unique. Perhaps God has in mind that the unique gifts of each person brought together in community can elevate human experience and life here on earth. And so in a country like Liberia, where we've come through 14 years of war, schools were non-existent during that time, there's a new generation of illiterate, uneducated citizens.
And, you know, the funding, I found this unique, just having a little bit of knowledge about the church that you lead. How have the communities at Birmingham and Berkeley helped support your project?
Well, they've helped tremendously with their prayers, their gifts, their support, their encouragement. Is all First Church Birmingham and Berkeley is a large congregation that has a heart for God's mission in the world. And I can't stop to give them praises for that witness to their faith. They are a congregation that now has some 23 specific mission partnerships locally, nationally, and internationally. And Liberia is one of the new ones. Many retired teachers, like yourself, administrators who really see the value of education in lifting people are there. And they are helping us significantly to achieve that goal. The elementary school is now under construction.
That's exactly why I wanted to have you on my program, just knowing how important this is to a group, a generation of children who need it most, given the challenges they face. So aside from academics and vocational, how do you see the school supporting Christian values and leadership development?
Well, one of the key reasons for the school is not only to educate the mind and the hands, but also the heart and the soul. An educated person without the values that uphold society, human life, and enterprise and relationships is a disaster. Liberia needs more people with values of love, mercy, accommodation, sensitivity to the other. And that's why undergirding this school will be a value system that will sort of hoist education to a new level to transform the society for the benefit of all.
I look forward to the future there and your efforts in getting this school underway. Do you have an anticipated date that it will be completed?
Well, the elementary school, which is under construction, should be completed around March of 2026. And we have an ambitious goal of opening the elementary school in August of 2026. And we are very prayerful about that and hopeful about that.
That's exciting. The Reverend Dr. Charles Boyu from the Birmingham Berkeley First United Methodist Church, I want to thank you for stopping by School Talks and giving our listeners a really neat perspective on education, not only here, but obviously in Liberia. Keep up the great work, and I appreciate your time today.
Thank you so very much.
After the break, we'll chat with retired educator Frank Antonucci, who's going to provide us a fascinating perspective for students on how to be cool in a hands-on world. Stay right there. This is 760 WJR, and we'll be back right after this.
School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Frank Antonucci, a retired educator from Warren Consolidated Schools, and now, in his retirement, a published author. Welcome to the program, Frank.
Good morning, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing great, and I appreciate you stopping by the program. I'm really excited to hear about at least one of the books that you had written. It's called Being Cool in a Hands-On World. And on School Talks, we regularly promote and discuss different apprenticeship opportunities through one of our core sponsors, Musk Construction Careers, have a lot of apprenticeship program directors on and do a lot of discussion about opportunities for students. And I know in your time, for our School Talks listeners, Frank and I worked together for a short time in Warren Consolidated Schools when he was the director of career and technical education. And I was a superintendent. And our paths connected not long ago. I had the opportunity to read his book, and I found it just a really neat look at how you make working with your hands not only a successful opportunity, but one to be proud of. And I really took that message from your book. So let me ask you, as a career and technical education educator, how do you think that it influenced your perspectives when you wrote this book?
Well, I was a hands-on guy, and going to school wasn't my best situation. I was one of those students that kept quiet, didn't make much noise, and just got through school. I was never on the honor roll, never played sports, never threw a football, but I loved working with my hands, and back then, working with my hands was frowned upon. It was for, you know, they were always looking at, people are looking at the academic end of it and the honor roll type. So coming into the realm of education impacted me as I saw in myself the students that I had the first day.
So you spent 35 years in education.
Yes.
Can you point to a memorable moment that you think helped shape your approach to teaching and learning and sort of reinforcing this hands-on? I know you have many, but is there one you can shed light on?
Well, I would probably reflect back to the first week of teaching when I met my students. And I gave them a brief assignment, a writing assignment, and I saw how many of them lacked just the basic skills, and I just couldn't believe that they made it through to the 11th and 12th grade. So from then on there, I dedicated myself to teaching kids not only a skill, but real-world experiences.
And, you know, given the how much technology is dominating our world, I can see through reading your book especially, despite all of that, there still is a substantial need for people to work with their hands and actually do the work. You know, technology and artificial intelligence can do a lot, but it'd be a long time before it can change a toilet, right?
Yes. My students, the alumni that are out there listening, I used to tell them, look around this classroom. Everything that you see was built by somebody hands-on. The brick, the block, the doors, the cars, the tires, everything was hands-on. And if you can absorb what we're trying to teach you through the schools, through my program, life skills, it'll last you for indefinitely. And you don't have to go into auto body repair. That was my subject. But the core of the fundamentals will take you through a lifetime of a career.
Mm-hmm. We're currently chatting with Frank Antonucci, the retired educator from Warren Consolidated Schools and author of Being Cool in a Hands-On World. So, Frank, I'm sure in your time as an educator, you saw the evolution of career and technical education. And having been out of it for a short time, what things sort of do you see as part of this evolution that is a positive thing for students?
I see that the hands-on is picked up momentum over the last maybe 5-10 years, and there's hope out there. There's hope that the schools continue to invest in our kids and our programs, give them the opportunity that they once had. For a while, we started to get away from it, and you saw traditionally was in the northern schools when we used to participate in a program called MITE. Up north, you'd see them doing the woodworking and things. Well, now it's all coming 360 degrees back. The hope is out there. If you want to work with your hands and incorporate, infuse some academic learning, you need that academic piece too. You need your math and your writing skills, your reading skills. There's a future out there for you for a long, long time.
And you know, in our short time working together, one thing I remember about you is how much the students respected you because of how you engaged them and motivated them to do well in whatever it is they're interested in. And your book, is it available in any particular place?
It's available on Amazon.
Okay.
And I've been asked, I'm so proud of that book because I was inspired to write it because I am a student that was hands-on, and I became an educator because I believed in it that much, and I moved and kept growing and growing, and my desire was to teach these kids. I often tell and explain to when I talk to new teachers that are going back, devote, be honest with your students, be sincere with them. They know, you know, you got to put limitations. They know whether you're for real or you're not. Mm-hmm. And the day that you wake up that you don't like your students anymore, the day to get out. And I love those kids. I still see them quite a bit.
Yeah, that was going to be a follow-up question I had is, since your retirement, have you stayed connected to any of your former students and or sort of the education community at large?
through social media, and that was not real big on social media because I'm from the old school. But through my social media, I stay connected with quite a few of them. They tell me their success stories. They tell me some of their trials and tribulations that they've gone through. In 2016, we had a reunion. It was 40 years. We had a reunion, and there was approximately 350 that showed up, and they were from all over the country, and some were in Europe and Germany, and doing automotive work. And so I do stay connected with them, and I enjoy seeing them and hearing their stories. Not all of them stayed in the automotive, which is fine, but the basic fundamentals that were taught in my classroom stayed with them forever.
And, you know, it speaks volumes to the transferability of skills if you're good with your hands. That's a really important point.
Yes.
Frank Antonucci, author of Being Cool in a Hands-On World and a retired educator from Warren Consolidated Schools. I'm going to do my best to try to get your book in every school library that would accept it. And because I read it and I saw parts of myself in it, even though I went to college until they told me I couldn't go anymore. But growing up in a manufacturing household, that really made me appreciate what a lot of children go through. And I think many of them will actually see themselves in that book. And it's a great piece of work. And I appreciate your time on the program today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Coming up after the break, we're going to start our first in a multi-part series about what it means to go to school in Michigan, whether a public school, a private school, charter school, or online school. I think it's important time for our School Talks listeners to understand all the different kinds of schools in Michigan. Stay right there. We'll be back right after this.
School Talks on WJR is sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Plaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, Clark Construction, and by Must Construction Careers. Now let's get back to class. Once again, your host, former Superintendent Dr. Robert Livernoy.
As we close out today's program, I'd like to introduce to you a first in a multi-part series on the different kinds of schools operating in Michigan, including publicly funded traditional neighborhood schools, religious-based private schools, as well as other kinds of publicly funded schools like charter schools and online or cyber schools. This multi-part series will address a range of topics about how schools are funded, what curriculum do they follow, how are special education students supported, are they evaluated by the State Department of Education, and how do they manage attendance and student discipline. As we all know, given the importance of education and the need to recruit and retain great teachers, I hope this series will help our School Talks listeners develop a full understanding of what it means to go to school in Michigan. By way of introduction, I would like to provide a perspective on education in Michigan, given my experiences as a teacher, principal, and a superintendent, but most importantly, as a parent. A good place to start is how Michigan has attempted to improve educational outcomes in the last 30 years. Back in my younger days, my brother Steve and I decided to get a small 10-gallon aquarium for our bedroom, the kind with some bright colored rocks, a small bubbler, and some deep sea decorations. Ironically, the first fish we bought could not swim very well because it had opposing fins on each side of its body that would work against one another. Each time the fish tried to propel through the water, it simply, and this is true, it simply flapped its fins but didn't really go anywhere. And sometimes the fish slowly spun in circles, but for the most part, it just flapped in place and really made no forward progress. We were fascinated by this fish. Since the late 1990s, over 25 years ago, education reform in Michigan has been a lot like our fish. The steady flow of constantly changing legislative mandates, state department rules, new policies, and a bevy of expectations across any number of areas in education have been our fins and have made true forward progress very difficult, if not impossible at times. Over the years, while teachers have been working in crowded classrooms, Michigan's had a wide and ranging slate of education reformers who have all attempted to implement or deal with things like the high school proficiency test and adequate yearly progress from years ago. Or maybe you remember the federal No Child Left Behind, or the grade-level content expectations, or high school content expectations. And we can't forget the new Michigan Education Assessment Plan, which was the MEEP back in the day, and which has now been replaced by the MSTEP. And all of this stuff was designed to improve education, which included things like the Michigan Merit Curriculum, the new state accreditation models. We had school improvement-based letter grades for schools. At one time, we had color-coded assessments for schools. At one time, they were labeled reward, focus, and priority. There was a time when an educational achievement authority had been established, the Common Core, smarter balance, and the list goes on and on. Most recently, there has been a lot of focus on the third grade retention laws if a student was not reading at grade level. And mixed in all of this has been sort of an ebb and flow of how do we evaluate teachers. In most cases, this reform has been seemingly with good intent and purportedly designed somehow to improve, or dare I say, reform education, when in actuality, it has done just the opposite, as it has stifled the creativity of thousands of great teachers across our state because they have been forced to spend so much of their time complying with something. And that something is usually in the form of a mandate from the state. And I am not being critical of anyone in their efforts to reform or improve education. But the travesty in all of this is that change in schools is incredibly constant. And when you consider where Michigan has been caught in the last 25 plus years, it's really been in this sort of educational chess match, depending on who holds the power in Lansing. And sadly, and excuse the metaphor, the children have been the pawns in the game. And because of that, it's been really tough for Michigan to make progress. And to me, it seems that if we truly care about the future of our state and the children who will eventually work and live in it, we must find the courage to stop introducing so much change into education. Because I've learned in my career, educating children is really quite simple. Build some strong relationships with them based on trust and respect. Encourage them to do their best with really high expectations and focus on whether or not they're learning. And really, when you consider that as a simple recipe, it is what teachers need the most. And that is the freedom to do that to the best of their ability, because they have really enough to deal with, given many of them are working and dealing with poverty and social issues every single day in the classroom. So as we look ahead to this multi-part series, I'm looking forward to sharing with the School Talks audience all of these different parts about what it means to go to school in Michigan, and depending on where you go, what are some of these rules and things that you have to follow. And that's all the time we have for today. I'd like to thank our guests, Dr. Jim Sawyer from Macomb Community College, the Reverend Dr. Charles Boyeux from Birmingham First United Methodist Church, and retired educator and CTE career technical education author Frank Antonucci. That's all the time we have for today. But remember, there are two ways to spell one and three ways to spell two. Till next time, this has been School Talks on 760 WJR.